Correct. No, thank you. Next. I'm Megan, and I talk about true crime stories that happen while dating.
And I'm Rachel. I talk about true crime stories that happen while married. Welcome back. Hello.
How was your week? How is everyone doing? Since we last.
Of course. It's Honey.
Oh, it's
a I just saw the velociraptor door handle like click, and then I heard her like sniff the door like really hard. All right, she didn't come in though. I just saw her like mess with the handle. Of course, the second you press record, there was no activity before then. But just, now
that's how horror movies work.
For real, this is how they start.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So guys, it really the irony is not lost on me that the last time we spoke was me just really going on and on about how lucky I am and the luck in my life. And I was very, very grateful, but also apparently karma was coming for me, or I'm not sure what was in the cards, but I heard it loud and clear. And I will not ever talk about my luck ever again.
Oh no.
Due to this, I will keep my luck to myself.
Oh boy.
So you know when you're just like on vacation and you're just having a really great time, and then you're like, oh, I have to go home, and you're like, I must be the only one that needs to go home. No, on a Sunday morning it's not in Vegas. It wasn't just me, and my flight was at 6 a.m., but unbeknownst to me, everyone that was flying between 8 and 9 a.m. was also there at 6 a.m., so I woke up at, my friend tried to rationalize with me that I was flying Delta, and I didn't need to get there early. We made a middle ground, and I left, like, she only lives maybe 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. But we decided we would leave around 4:55. So like close
That's
to
so
five.
Early.
So early. My flight's at 6. That's plenty of time. No, it is not. Because we went to arrivals and I was departing. So we had to go around. Probably should have gotten out of the car right there and just walked my little ass to the freaking baggage check. But no. I said, we got time. Let's do another loop of this beautiful airport. So we did that. We did a beautiful scenic tour of the Las Vegas airport, to which it ended up. What is that noise?
It's Sam.
Oh.
She's meowing. Sammy, you got to go back downstairs, honey, okay? You found your cat doll. That's awesome. Okay. I'll see it in a minute. Okay. Okay, she's gone.
Okay.
Tell Mike to keep her downstairs. Sorry.
Okay. No, don't worry. I was just like, do you have a baby that you didn't tell me about or something? Like,
I didn't tell anybody about in this secret child.
Yeah. I was like, what is that noise?
My cat child.
Yeah. Perfect.
Sometimes she howls, sometimes she meows. Never know.
It's the perfect mix of all the animals.
Of all of them. Yes. Okay. So, as you were saying, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Anyways, so we ended up at departures about 5:30 to maybe 5:15, actually, because it did take me like 45 minutes. And I ran to my gate and it was closed, just closed. It was no longer allowing me to join the party. Apparently they overbooked the flight anyway, so they wouldn't have let me on had I even made it 5 minutes before, because some girl did at the gate and they were like, oh yeah, no, there's no seat. And she was like, but I have a flight, and I mean a ticket. And they were like, no, sorry, this flight was overbooked in error.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And that's happened to me and Mike when we were flying back from Hawaii.
Got married,
we arrived, we thought we had plenty of time. We arrived, we like had lunch, and then we arrived at the gate and they said they were done boarding. And we're like, but we have tickets. We need to get on this flight. And like, when you fly from like Maui's airport to California, like there's like only one flight.
Yeah.
So we were trying to get on it at like 11:15 or something like that. And they wouldn't let us on. They're like, no, we took two standby passengers in place of you because you weren't here at the time of boarding, because we got the times like wrong by like 10 minutes and we missed our flight.
10 minutes.
We had to wait for a red eye. And so we flew out of there and we flew like through the middle of the night. It was exhausting. So I feel your pain on missing a flight and having to be told, no, I'm sorry, you cannot board this flight. I feel your pain on that.
And they basically were like, okay, well, you can fly out. I think it was like 9 p.m. or something. And it was 6 a.m. I was like, there's no fucking way I'm sitting in this airport for like 13 hours or whatever it is. So technically I could have gone and like my friend could pick me up and whatever. But I was just like so deflated after that. And I was like so sad. I walked to so many gates trying to see if I could. I would literally was going to spend $400 to fucking go home at that moment. And all of them were on standby. Like, had I bought a $400 ticket, there was no guarantee I'd even be on the flight. So it was just like, okay. So I call Vince and I was just like so upset. And he's like, calm down, it's fine. So on Monday morning, he bought a flight for me to come home the next day, because I was like so upset. He was just like, here, I got you a flight. And then I just went to work late. I literally woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, flew home, drove from LAX home. Well, Vince drove. And then I literally changed and went to work.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was the longest Monday in the history of Mondays.
Oh no. Yeah. That sucks.
Sorry. It was terrible. That sucks. I know. So anyways, guys, the luck, that beautiful, beautiful luck I spoke so highly of last week. I mean, listen, there's still small little bright spots in all of that, but still it fucking sucks when your plan goes awry. And also like when you almost, I don't know, it just feels kind of like you're in trouble. Like you did something wrong. You missed your flight, you know, which by the way, that Monday flight that I took at 6 a.m. to get to work, there were 15 people missing on the flight and we had to sit there and wait a half an hour, which I wish I was afforded that time,
that courtesy.
Yes. Like what the hell?
Oh my gosh.
I know. So that unfortunately sucks. I was not. And you were, but it was very fine.
Humbled at that point. Yes. Yeah.
My friends are very similar to me. And one of them had to sleep during the day because she works nights. And my other friend, Ian, is just as lazy as I am. So she let me nap and just sulk all day. And then we got
very Mexican, kind.
Yeah, we got Mexican food and watched Sweet Home Alabama, and it was the perfect Sunday. Nice. So yeah. I also, I forgot. We watched, have you ever watched Too Hot to Handle on Netflix? No. Ugh, neither had I. And it was on, and she was like, do you want to watch this? And you know, when you're like, this was the Saturday before I left. Mm-hmm. We had like a lazy day too, because we were really tired. Like, I mean, when you live life after a pandemic, it really takes a toll on the body. Like, oh my God. Like 2 days, like we did stuff for two full days in Vegas. And by Saturday I was like, so like, I'm just going to nap the day away. Okay. like we're just, we tried to watch. It's so exhausting. We tried to watch Luca on Disney. We both fell asleep like 2 minutes in. We woke up as the end credits were coming up. And yeah, so Too Hot to Handle was on. So we both wanted like a lazy day. And we started watching that. There was only 4 episodes out. But it is, I don't know. I usually hate those shows, but I was very involved. I was very into it, what was happening. But anyways, if any of you guys watch Too Hot to Handle, it's a very interesting show. Hmm. But yeah, so speaking of TV, you finally watched a show that I had recommended 73 years ago. tell me what you thought.
That's usually how it works.
Yeah, when so did this? I feel like it came out end of last year, right? I'm curious.
I think it was like February or something last year or of this year. Let me see.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I got on board like within the first week it was out.
Let me see. It usually says like if you look at a movie poster for Netflix, it usually has the date.
It says
February. So it could have been this year. It doesn't have the year. It just says February. So I'm assuming it was this year.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not too far behind.
Yeah. No, that's not terribly. That's like 6 months. That's good.
That's not too bad, right? Normally I'm like years behind.
That is true.
But I loved it. So I finally watched Behind Her Eyes and it grabs you almost immediately. Like you're very interested in these characters and like what happens. And the twist at the end, I didn't see coming. And then it like hits you again that like, no, there's another twist.
Yeah. Cause when you, and when you also think back to the entire series, like if you mentally go back to the beginning, thinking about what you know in the end, it makes the entire show different. Like
completely.
It's like wild.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know. I love the element of like real world situations, but also like the magical aspect of it was kind of like, I don't know. I think that's why I told you to watch it. Cause it was very much like a genre you would enjoy when it comes to like fantastical, but also like grounded in reality. It was just like so fucked up.
It was really fucked up, like completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to like give anything away if anyone's late to the party like me, but it like
it
the
has characters. Been 6 months.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah. Yeah, but the
secrets
are great.
That are buried between all these people just makes their lives even more complicated. And it's almost like it's a psychological thriller. Like you want to get into the mind of what's going on with these people. And even though, you know, the main character's been told to like stay away from this family, she still wants to like dig a little deeper and find out more. It's just, I thought it was so, so original. It was very original, very, very cool. So if you are like me and you haven't watched it, I recommend seeing Behind Her Eyes.
Yeah, this is how it goes. Like I recommend, then you eventually recommend.
Eventually.
Eventually you get on board. But yeah.
That's right.
Wait, okay. So did I talk about Kevin Can Go Fuck Himself yet on here?
No.
Okay. So another show that is very, very like, I have never seen something shot like this before. It's very cool in this aspect. So basically Annie Murphy, who is Alexis from Schitt's Creek. So the format of the show is like almost like any CBS show, like King of Queens. What was that? Molly and whatever, like Melissa McCarthy had a show on.
Was it like Mike and Molly?
Yeah, Mike and Molly.
Okay.
Like where a woman is very like, a woman has a schmucky boy, like husband that just like, oh geez, like I thought we were like, I don't even know. Like she wants more in life and he's just like, oh geez, it's Pottery Barn from Goodwill. Like who cares? Like
right.
That type of vibe. But so when she's with her husband in a room, the show is filmed just like a sitcom, like King of Queens. It has an audience, all of that. The second she leaves the room, it's shot as like a dark, I don't know how I would explain it. Like it's almost like I would say like Breaking Bad. Like it's all of a sudden it becomes a show that's, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like WandaVision-esque, but I'll have to pop up like a preview because it's really hard to explain, but it becomes less of a multicam and it becomes a like actual dark TV show.
Okay.
She basically wants to kill her husband. Like she hates him so much that he's like holding her back in life because he's such a schmuck. and like his friends are just like him. But the entire way the show is shot changes when she's by herself. It becomes like an actual gritty, like well shot show. And it's like she's two different versions of herself. It's so wild and so well done visually that I feel like it's unlike anything I've ever seen. And I know some other people have been recommending this show, but I think it's murder adjacent as well. Because I think she eventually does. I don't know. She keeps like, she has a lot of anger inside of her. And like when she's by herself, like she hears her husband speaking from another room. Like a lot of times she'll like really like clench up and like break shit. So I feel like, yeah, it's very, all I can say is just watch the first episode to kind of get an idea, or even the preview of the show to visually see what I'm saying. But it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. And it's really, really good. Because when I originally saw the preview, I was like, why would Annie Murphy go from something like Schitt's Creek to like a King of Queens show, you know? Right. Like, it's just very odd direction for her career. And then when I saw like the authenticity of her character in the scenes when she's alone, like it's just such a dynamic character, because she has to play this like oh shucks like character when she's with her husband, and then this character that's so fucking miserable and depressed and like wants to like have such a beautiful life. Like there's like flashes to like her almost being like a Susie Homemaker, like wearing like the apron and like her hair's done up like beautifully, and like she wants that life so bad. And she's just, I want to say this takes place in like Philadelphia or something like that, but yeah, it's just so good. So highly recommend, guys, try it out.
Is that on Netflix?
No, I think it's on AMC, which could be why a lot of people haven't been watching it or haven't heard of it, because it's like an actual show, you know, that's like once a week type thing.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, I've been watching it on demand. I need to get back to it. I've only watched a couple episodes. Cool. But yeah, very interesting.
Ooh. Yeah.
And then my last recommendation is a podcast, which I'm sure I talked about when it was the first season, which was like a couple years ago. But it's a writer from Rolling Stone. Who the original one, the first season was about a girl that went missing and the boyfriend, and they were doing it in real time, I believe. And the boyfriend that had done it, they believed that like his dad was involved, but he ends up like killing himself during a police chase. So, but this writer is like so involved. He goes through like his Google, like, places, like, because when you're connected to Google you can turn off a feature, but also there's a feature where on your maps it'll say everywhere you went even if you're not using maps, to try and solve like if he had killed his girlfriend or where he could have put her body. The first season was very, very good, but this season is so phenomenal. Basically his wife becomes obsessed with this story of a girl that went missing in Malibu. And she's from Glendale, and she is of Asian descent, and she feels that this is a story that's not being heard. So she becomes really obsessed with it. She feels like not enough people are doing enough to talk about the case or try and even figure out, like, she goes to call the mom and find out if there have search parties, because she wants to help, like, join the search parties, and they're like, there's no search parties. There's never been a search party. Like, wild. So their best friends, because he works for Rolling Stone, this couple, they're best friends with the lead singer of Incubus. So since he has kind of a pull as far as like money to help, like they all have money to help fund to try and find this girl. Right. So the mom has a private investigator involved in the case, because the police are like, well, she lives in Glendale, but the car was found in Malibu. And it's like, this always frustrates me, this jurisdiction business, like, because she lives in Glendale doesn't mean that she went missing in Glendale, but they're like, no, it's her case because it's their case because she lived there, just because her car was found here, blah blah blah. Such bullshit. So this case is kind of getting tossed around, so they start a GoFundMe, and that's where everything gets started. And he, the writer for Rolling Stone, gets started on his investigating. And he goes back and literally starts interviewing every person in her life. And you hear that through the podcast. He touches base with the private investigator. The mom is just so weird. Like, as the show goes on, you really realize that the mom has some fishy shit. Like, she's not this like humbled mom. Like, she talks very oddly about their relationship, even as she talks as if her daughter is dead. So as it goes on, like, so many twists and turns so far. This week's episode, or I guess it's like the episode that came out 3 weeks ago, like, now that you guys are listening, we are pre-planning due to vacations. So it's getting really, really good. I know a lot of people that started it and were like, eh, this is a weird story, and stopped. So if you are one of those people that like, we're like, eh, I'm not really into this story, because I do that shit all the time, keep going. That's my recommendation. If you haven't heard of it, push through it in my recommendation. But if you stopped, keep going. And if you have listened to it, let us know what you think, because I am truly just so shook by like the twist that's taken. Like, I was fully on board that like maybe the boyfriend did it, and because she was with him. But as he's starting to investigate people, it really seems like some other people were involved, and it's very, very fishy. Yeah. And this is a live ish podcast, so he's investigating as he's releasing episodes. So there's a lot of like current things that are happening. So it's wild. Oh no.
What's the name of the podcast?
To Live and Die in LA. Oh, did I even talk about that in the beginning?
I don't know.
That is my bad.
I don't think so.
That is my bad. To Live and Die in LA.
That's what it is.
So yeah, it's LA stories.
That's so crazy that Brandon Boyd is even involved.
Yeah.
And it's like helping with the investigation. Like, as if there wasn't any more reason to love that man more.
I know. But yeah, he uses his status to like get people to come forward and talk. Like, he like DM'd a girl and was like, hey, if you want to chat about like what's going on in the case, like, you can come to a show and we'll meet backstage. Like, just trying to get people to come forward. So he uses his music for good. Oh, that's she made awesome. It.
They're here. They Clifford too.
Oh, geez. Oh my goodness.
I got a little love fest going on in here. Hi, guys.
Aww.
Hi. All these interruptions today. Ugh. What is this? Amateur hour? Then I've got my fucking knee brace on. I gotta try to like get comfortable.
Ugh. Oh,
I go your appointment MRI tomorrow.
Yeah. I was going to say, is that tomorrow still? Oh, good.
Oh, that's just the MRI. And then I have to be seen by the actual doctor to like tell me what I did.
But that's on the step. 16th.
So I'm still not out of the woods yet.
Jeez Louise.
Oh, I'm just so tired of it. And then I was reading about like recovery after getting knee surgery, whether it's an ACL, MCL, or meniscus. And it's just like, yeah, you're going to be back on crunches for another 4 to 6 weeks and won't be able to walk and will be in a knee brace, and you're going to have to take like over 6 months to heal. So I cried about it. I was really upset.
I know. I did the same thing with my ankle. I was just like, who's like lived through this before? Like, who can tell me I want to see someone that's like gone through it and like, it's okay now. Like, that would motivate me. I'm like, who broke their ankle? What celebrity?
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. Well, there's a girl on Instagram that she's like a suicide girl, and we ended up talking. I probably because I have another friend who was a suicide girl, and she is now a firefighter. Like, she's like working with like paramedics, and she is like working with firefighters. And she says that she's had surgeries on both of her knees. Like, she has torn.
Wow. Okay.
Like, either her ACL or like her meniscus. And she's like super into the medical field at the moment. And we also have kids that are about the same age. So her and I talk and she's just like, it'll be okay. Like, I've had the surgery. I totally know what you're going through. And like, she'll respond to like my Instagram stories when I post something about my knee, or like, she'll just ask like, hey, how's it going? Like, what's up? Like, how are you feeling? What's the update? Like, what's going on? Yeah. So it's cool. I've got a friend from like another state who's just like, yeah, I understand what you're going through. It sucks, but it'll get better because she's a freaking firefighter now. I was like, all right, I've got this. It'll go uphill, but it's just shit right now.
Yeah. When you're in the thick of it, like, it's just like terrible. It sucks. And it's like, you're just waiting for the surgery, but then it's like, you're starting over. So it's like, yeah, I totally get it. It's the worst, but it's also just,
like,
but it's the only thing that'll get you back to normal, you know? So it's like,
well,
if you don't have surgery,
it's frustrating because, but like Mike and I were talking about like trying to get pregnant again by the end of this year. And then we were hoping to go and have like a really great time celebrating our 10-year wedding anniversary next month. And we had all these like fun things and trips that we were planning, but like, since I hurt my knee, it's like all of that has stopped. All of that has come to a halt.
I mean,
and it just like, it just sucks. Cause I mean, we can still go on vacation, but like, I won't be able to walk. So it's not going to be as much fun. Yeah. And if we were planning on getting pregnant, like we can't start trying until after I have surgery and then after I've healed. So like that puts an even longer time frame on that. Like, Sam's gonna be 5 soon. It's just like, there's like a lot of little things that get to you when you realize like, okay, all of this has been put on hold due to my ass jumping on a trampoline. Just like, I didn't think it was gonna have that big of an impact. I thought it was like, okay, there's some swelling and it'll be done, but I haven't improved. So it's like, never again.
One small, you know, it's so wild. One small decision just creates such ripple effects.
Ugh. Yeah. And speaking of ripple effects, the story I have today is wild. It's based in a small Californian man-made oasis in the Mojave Desert that lies between Barstow and Victorville on the famous Route 66.
Ooh.
And I kind of laughed about that because I grew up in Barstow. From like 1991 to like 97. And we would go to Victorville for fun, fancy day trips to go like either eat at a restaurant or go to their mall, because their mall had like a record store and like a big bookstore and Sanrio Surprise. Like, that was the best. Like, I just had to go to Sanrio every single time.
Gotta get that mystery pack, but also the essentials.
Exactly. Yeah, I always bought stationery. I just was like,
all my school supplies of my
stationery here.
Of course you do.
Between that, of course I do. I hoard things. I keep things.
Exactly.
Very attached to things.
Yes.
But I never knew that this other little place existed. And like, you travel through Barstow on your way to Vegas. So like, you have an idea of where Barstow is. Like, it's the middle of
there. There's some outlets.
I grew up there.
Maybe a subway.
Yeah, the Lenwood outlets. It's just not the same as the Victorville Mall though.
No.
The Victorville Mall was something else.
Of course.
So there's miles and miles of desert until you reach another town. It's the little unincorporated community of Hellendale, also known as Silver Lakes. Hmm. Now, before we get into Silver Lakes, I will introduce you to Robert and Sabrina Lamone. Just so we're clear, I'm going to be calling Robert Rob during this whole story.
Okay.
The two meet while they live in Prescott, Arizona. Rob comes from a broken home of divorced parents, but he found himself falling in love with Sabrina and her family as if it was meant to be. Her family adored him and they welcomed him into the family with open arms, and the couple happily wed on August 19th of 2000. Ooh. And then shortly after, they moved out of Arizona and they moved to Hellendale, California. Rob worked as a mechanic at a railroad company, and Sabrina found her job as a sample girl at their local Costco. Rob and Sabrina, they also grew their family by two, a son and a daughter. They loved life. They each had very magnetic personalities that quickly attracted a close group of friends. While getting her hair done at a local salon, Sabrina would meet her best friend, Kelly, and soon Kelly's husband, Jason. Rob kind of looked like an intimidating person to Jason because Rob was really handsome and he's like a big guy. He's tall. He's got muscles. He's got tattoos. He's got like his last name tattooed on the back of his head. Ooh. Like he seems really hardcore. But after he met him, Rob is just the most down-to-earth, nicest guy you'd ever have the privilege of meeting. So this friend group is inseparable. They spend every holiday and every family birthday together, and they were so tight-knit that the group dubbed themselves the Wolf Pack. If you weren't in the pack, you wish you could be, and if you were in the pack, then you wanted to be just like Rob and Sabrina. I don't know if they were like the original Wolf Pack. I don't know if like this touches into like the Hangover movie. We're like, yeah, it'd be so cool if we called ourselves the Wolf Pack. But this could have happened before that. Maybe they're the OGs.
He drugged her and they ended up on a roof out in Vegas and they're like Wolfpack for sure.
Wolfpack, that's us. That's it. So we have Kelly and Jason. They're married and they are best friends with the Lamones.
Okay.
Now Jason has a coworker named Jonathan Hearn, and he's young, he's super smart, and he's an excellent paramedic apprenticing to be a firefighter. His job was to go and get food and supplies for the station, so he would frequent the local Costco, and that is where he meets sample gal Sabrina. He seems like a nice enough guy and is invited by Jason to come to a Wolfpack party. And Jason's wife, Kelly, meets him, introduces him to Sabrina. And then Kelly gets this vibe that Sabrina somehow already knows Jonathan, because Sabrina wasn't her usual boisterous, like, hey, good to meet you self. She was like, hey, nice to see you. It was a little awkward as she said hello. Over the next few days, Jonathan would text Jason and tell him how much fun he had at the party. You know, when's your next party? I would love to hang out again. And the text started out like, okay, this guy like likes us. He wants to be our friend. He wants to hang out. But then Jonathan started texting Jason every day. Hey guys, what are you doing? Hey, you want to hang out? Hey, when's the next party? It just became a little bit obsessive.
Uh-oh.
I was surprised. Whoa, did it freeze?
Yeah, for so long.
Oh no. Okay.
You ended on obsessive.
Do you know where?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's not too bad. Okay. Sorry, guys. So the text messages, they seemed pretty obsessive. And then Jonathan's like, okay, I have to tell you the truth of why I keep texting you. I need Rob's number. And Jason's like, why do you need Rob's number? And he's like, well, I need to let him know that I've been having an affair with Sabrina. And that's why Sabrina was like so awkward at the party, is because they had already been sleeping together. That's why she knew who he was.
Oh no.
So Jason's like, what the hell, man? Like, why would you do that? Like, you know, she's married. Like, what the hell? So Jason tells Rob, cause Rob is there while Jason's on the phone with Jonathan. And he tells Rob like, hey man, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but your wife's been having an affair with one of the guys that I work with. And Rob, he just wasn't surprised. And he told Jason, yeah, I know. I saw some text messages on Sabrina's phone between the two of them. And I got really super pissed off and I broke Sabrina's phone and I ended up having to get her a new one. Cause he was just like livid. So Jonathan and Rob, the husband, end up meeting up. They talk about what happened. Jonathan promises he'll never ever do it again. He apologized and he cleared the air between them. And Sabrina and Rob, they asked their friends, Kelly and Jason, who knew about this whole situation, just keep it hush hush for their reputation's sake. Like, we don't want the people in Silver Lake to know that this happened between us. Like, so many people know who we are. They like us. We want to keep our reputation like clean. We're good, right? So keep it a secret.
Wow.
1 year later, so everything seems good for a whole entire year. And then Kelly goes shopping at Costco. And what does she see? She sees Jonathan hanging around Sabrina while she's working, handing out samples. And they're just chatting it up as if no time has passed between them.
Whoa.
Kelly's pissed because her best friend went back on her word, and now she's wondering if she's continuing this affair behind Rob's back. And Kelly confided her findings to her husband, Jason. She's like, hey, I didn't approach them, but I saw that Jonathan was hanging around with Sabrina at her work, and they seemed like a little too friendly, if you know what I mean. So Jason, who still works with Jonathan, calls him up and he's like, dude, what the hell are you doing? You know, you're supposed to stay away from Sabrina. Like, this doesn't look good. Like, you had an affair with her. Like, you shouldn't be friendly with her. Like, stay away from her. Yeah. And Jonathan is like, it's nothing. We're spiritual friends. Like, we have the same like relationship with God, and we just talk about God and everything's fine. It's just, it's a spiritual connection. Okay. But Jason just yells at him. He's like, look, you've already upset this family enough. Stay out of Sabrina's Costco. Like, go somewhere else. And Jonathan agrees, and it seems like that's the end of their secret friendship until something else happens that changes everyone's lives forever. So Rob, being the nice guy that he is, he covered a shift at the railway yard for a coworker over in Tehachapi, which was about 90 miles away from home. Sabrina and Rob, they would text each other, call each other throughout the day. It was, hey, how are you? Hey, call me on your break, or I'll talk to you on your lunch, whatever.
Yeah.
But this particular day, there was not a lot of communication. And Sabrina couldn't really get a hold of him in the afternoon and long into the night. And she's like, okay, he's not home. He's not home yet. He's not answering my calls, my text messages. Like, something's wrong. At 8 o'clock PM on August 17, 2014, a 911 call was made from a coworker who found Rob unresponsive and badly bleeding. The scene was a complete mess, and it appeared to be a burglary. Paramedics arrive, and there is nothing they can do to help save him. Robert Lamone was fatally shot and pronounced dead at the scene. News of Rob spreads through the small community and shocks everyone, because who would do this to Rob? Kern County Sheriff Meyer arrives on the scene and inspects Rob's wounds. He's been shot in the upper chest and in the face near his chin. The office was ransacked, but it looked suspicious to Detective Meyer because burglars generally don't kill people. They just steal your shit and they run away. Mm-hmm. There are no shell casings found on the ground, so the only weapons evidence they have is a bullet that's found inside of Rob. The railroad company offered a $10,000 reward for anyone who knew any information about the crime. The workers of the company were questioned, and they were all ruled out as, like, they're not suspects. They loved this man. They respected him. Like, they would never do this to him.
Wow.
Sabrina is then questioned, and she confirms what everyone was saying about her late husband. He's kind, he's hardworking, loving, and well-liked by everyone. And together they had a great marriage. The Wolfpack rallied for Sabrina. They brought her meals, comforted her, helped her with her kids and the household chores. They helped her with anything she needed because she was a part of the pack. I mean, if it had happened to anybody else, she would have done the same. Detectives began their search, and they looked into the railway yard security cameras, and they captured a man walking with a limp, walking into the building that Rob was killed in, and then they saw him walk out and leave the yard. A tip came in of a man who matched the limp walking description and the height description, because this man would usually, he would routinely cut through the railway yard on his way to work. But that turned out to be a dead end. He had an alibi, and his alibi was confirmed. A second tip came in from a local gunsmith who worked on a gun recently for a man who wanted to change out his firing pin. It's a pin in the gun that makes a mark on the bullet shell casing when the trigger is pulled, which, if it's altered from the original pin, it can throw off anyone trying to track the weapon type. But that too, even though suspicious, turns out to be a dead end. The security cameras that were owned by businesses that faced the streets and the roads turned out to be the best place to search for clues. Cars that drove by were accounted for by business owners, and they're like, yeah, that's my customer's car. It was such a small town. You can kind of pick out, this is so-and-so's car. Yeah, that's my car. But there was a motorcycle rider that stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, nobody knew who this guy was. 2 weeks after Rob's murder, Jonathan leaves a weird voicemail on Jason's phone saying he wants to apologize and make it right with God, but he isn't really saying why he wants to apologize. Since And then Kelly goes to go visit her friend. She goes to Sabrina's house and she finds out that Jonathan has been visiting Sabrina since Rob's death. He gave her a giant bouquet of flowers. He wrote her a love letter, just professing how much he loved her and how he wants to take care of her and be the kind of man Rob was for her. It seems like Jonathan is a little obsessive in wanting to replace Rob. And Sabrina seems happy to have someone that she can lean on at this moment in her life. Jason and Kelly, the best friends, like they're not buying it. And Jason calls Detective Meyer and he explains that if anyone wanted to get Rob out of the picture, it's Jonathan. But Detective Meyer is like, it's kind of unlikely for this incredibly smart young paramedic. He's like 10 years younger than everybody. Like he's a paramedic slash firefighter. He's got his whole life ahead of him. Like, why would he risk his future for a woman that he had a brief affair with? Maybe he's just being nice and like being the person that he thinks Sabrina needs. Detective Meyer is thinking that the affair may have not been a big deal because he learns that Sabrina and Rob had an open marriage and they invited other married couples into their relationship and they partner swapped.
Jeez. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of like the upside down pineapple theory?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With swingers. Yeah. I feel like they would have an upside down pineapple in their house.
And he's like, oh my hey, God.
Oh my gosh. If you don't know, if you have an upside down pineapple, like picture in your home or like in the front of your house, it means that you're a swinger and like you're welcoming other couples into your home.
Yep. Just pineapples. So you know. Where is that?
Pineapples. Yep. The open marriage was a surprise, but Detective Meyer is a great detective. And even though he may have played down the affair to Jason, he was actually taking a closer look into Jonathan. And this is what he learns. Jonathan has a gun that's registered to him that matched the .44 caliber bullet found inside of Rob. Jonathan also owned a Yamaha motorcycle, and that looked very similar to the motorcycle that was seen on surveillance. According to Detective Meyer, there is a gas station that was the easiest road to travel from Tehachapi, where Rob was murdered, to Hesperia, where Jonathan lives. He looked at the surveillance tapes from the gas station and he noticed the man on the motorcycle had the same stature and sitting stance on the bike as the original footage of the motorcyclist leaving the railway work site. The clothes may have been different, but the helmet and the bike were similar, and the motorcyclist showed up at the gas station about an hour after the murder occurred. So it seems like this person wore clothes to the railway site, took off those clothes if he had any blood on them, and then made it look like I wasn't wearing the clothes from the scene. I'm wearing different clothes at the gas station. So it's suspicious.
Yeah.
Detective Meyer also looks into his phone records and discovered that there were thousands of phone calls and text messages between Jonathan and Sabrina.
Jeez.
4 months before Rob's death, all of a sudden they just stop. The days leading up to Rob's murder and then the days following, there's a lot of calling and texting happening between a random phone number that's not Sabrina's. The number was looked into and it was a pay-as-you-go phone. So there's no user contact information. Mm. So it's like a burner phone. You don't know who's using it, but you can, but it matches. It. Yeah. But it matches the same like obsessiveness of calls and text messages between Jonathan and Sabrina.
Got it.
So it raises Detective Meyer's eyebrow. He's like, okay, I need to keep a close look on Jonathan. Like I really need to look into this guy. Detectives would then even put a tail on Jonathan. So if he traveled anywhere, there was somebody following him. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan went to a Target and he dumped some motorcycle parts in their trash. So the detectives go in, they dig out their trash, they fish it out. And it appears that Jonathan changed his exhaust pipes to make his motorcycle look and sound differently, seemingly to cover up his tracks.
Yeah.
So like I said, Detective Meyer, he isn't fucking around and he gets a wiretap approval and listens to hundreds of hours of audio between Sabrina and Jonathan while they're on the phone together. They talk about their future, how much they love each other, God's plan for them, and they even bring up Detective Meyer. Oh, the detective would call Sabrina he would tell her a little white lie, like, oh man, I'm so sorry, Sabrina, we don't have any leads on the case. And after they would get off the phone, Sabrina would immediately call Jonathan and share the information while Meyer listened.
Wow.
Soon, Meyer tells Sabrina, hey, we found some DNA at the scene. And she gets nervous. And again, she immediately calls Jonathan when she gets off the phone and like tells him what the detective told her. So Jonathan starts to become skeptical and he tells Sabrina that detectives are allowed to lie to obtain information. And he's wondering if that's what Detective Meyer is doing. But being suspicious makes it sound like they don't want the killer to be caught, you know, like they don't sound happy about it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, justice. Yay. We're going to find out who it is. No, they're like, well, he's a lot. Well, I think he's trying to like trick you. Like, what's he saying? Like, what information is being shared? They're like super suspicious. So that's a red flag.
Yeah.
On the religious side of the conversations, Jonathan compares Sabrina and himself to the Old Testament story of David and Bathsheba. Now, I'm not a religious person. I looked into it. And long story short, King David and Bathsheba have an affair, even though Bathsheba is married. So they've committed adultery, which is a sin. You're not supposed to do it. Yeah. And King David goes so far as to kill Bathsheba's husband so that way they can be together. And Sabrina and Jonathan, they would talk about their sins and how awful they felt. But what sins were they referring to? Like, were they not only speaking of adultery? Were they also speaking about murder? Like, what are they hiding?
Yeah.
The last thing Detective Meyer does while Sabrina is on the phone with Jonathan. So he's listening to their phone call and he sends her a photo of the motorcyclist and asks, do you recognize him? Because we believe that this is our guy. Wow. And Jonathan immediately starts praying while on the phone with Sabrina. Help me to be strong. Help me to live freely. Like, they truly believe that their conversations are being listened to, so they're being careful. But Jonathan immediately starts praying.
Oh my God.
I don't know. They end their phone call as if this is the last time they're ever going to speak to each other. I love you so much. Oh, you know, we'll be okay.
Yeah, just yeah.
Be strong. I love you. Take care. Like, okay. 2 days later, with all of the gathered evidence against them, Jonathan Hearn and Sabrina Lamone are arrested for the murder of Robert Lamone. Dun, dun, dun. This is where I'm going to end this episode, guys, because there's a lot more to come. So,
oh my God.
This is a two-parter. Surprise! Two-parter.
Oh my God.
Please don't look up the results of this case. Instead, tune in next week where I bring you the conclusion of this horrible story.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot more to come. So don't look it up. Don't research it.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what happens. It. Just wait.
God,
just
come back. Just
back to us. All right. Come back to us.
All right, guys. Well, we'll see y'all next week for the same goddamn story. Because I always forget right. And say it's a new one. So same one. It's the end same of this one.
Same one.
End of this one.
Come back.
Come back. All right.
Bye.